It is Your Money. I'm Susie Jones. So happy to have you with us on this Sunday morning. Bruce Helmer, the founder, co-founder of Wealth Enhancement Group, and Peg Webb, Senior Vice President, always here with you every Sunday. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning, Susie. Good morning, Bruce.
Good morning, Peg. Good morning, Susie Jones. Good morning, listeners. Thank you for being with us. And Susie, today our topic, and Peg, this is, you know, a lot of times we get the same question or similar question frequently, and when we get it often enough, and one question might have many avenues to it or many different things to consider, we decide to make an entire show out of it. And we're going to do that today. And the name of the show is, should I claim my Social Security benefit at age 62 and invest it? And we're going to speak about that in depth. And but Peg, before we get there, we always take some pride into also mentioning current events and recent news. And late last week, the Supreme Court finally came down with a decision that a lot of the tariffs that President Trump had implemented, that he didn't have the authority to do that in a 6-3 vote, which surprised me a little bit that conservative justices actually voted against the president on this issue. So there's a lot of people wondering what this is going to mean to the stock market, to their 401k, corporate leadership is scrambling now. And I remember not so long ago when we had Gary Quinzel on the show from our money management team, he said something that really stuck with me, Peg, that I think is profound. Markets can handle bad news. What markets don't handle very well is uncertainty. And boy, have we got uncertainty now in terms of, are there going to be tariffs? What are they going to be? What is President Trump's reaction going to be to this decision? How is he going to get around it? And so corporations are scrambling. But I think, you know, Peg, before I give you a chance to jump in, and then maybe people get frustrated with us from time to time for sounding like a broken record. But the key here is just state your plan for the long term. If you're a long-term investor and you're in the stock market and you don't need the money anytime soon, none of these short-term things should have any impact on you. But yet, I think it's a big enough story that we would be remiss if we didn't at least mention it. Peg?
Yeah, because they're going, the Supreme Court's going to take an additional 150 days. I think everything is very calm for the moment. Kind of the silver lining that that I read today from a reliable source is that the 10% tariffs that were announced are in line or they're currently tariff rates. And so what I would be concerned about is if it's going to create this huge global trade disruption. Now, our prediction is it's not going to happen. There's not going to be a panic. A year ago, April, there was kind of a panic of how this is going to go. So I don't see any real changes or hiccups or anything here. Let them do the 150 days and see how this falls. I think the stock market is just going to continue to do what it does. Bruce?
Yep, I agree. All right, let's segue into what we were planning to talk about. Should I claim Social Security at 62 and invest it? And just to give a little more context to that broad question, and I've had this come up many times over the years, I've had people say, I'm going to draw a smaller benefit, take it sooner, and I can control that money and invest it myself and get a higher return on investment than if I just leave it with the government. And so that's the question. Should I take it early, even if I'm not going to spend it, even if I'm not going to use it for lifestyle, and I'm going to take it and invest it myself? That's kind of the question before us. But again, there's a lot of things to consider. It's not as simple as the question might sound.
Yeah, and one of the things is when you're thinking about, okay, well, I could take that lower amount from Social Security at 62 and invest it. The problem with that is, and here's the motivation of why people bring it up, is because the stock market has done so well. You know, there's so many years, not all consistent years, but many years that the stock market has performed. So let's take an example, January of 2026, go back 20 years. Because I'm thinking, here's a 62-year-old that wants to maybe take their Social Security. let's go fast forward 20 years from now and just talk about the past. Well, the S&P 500 had a huge 10.89%. That is if you dividend reinvested, and that's your average return over those 20 years. Well, if you adjust that for inflation, it's 8.16, but these are big numbers. So I think that's why we're seeing this in social media, where there's a lot of people saying, well, why wouldn't I take it at 62 and start investing? Well, this is my opinion, though. We're talking about apples and oranges here, because the Social Security is actually what we call a guaranteed income. And you know, we get yeses and we get nos on, you know, should I take it? Shouldn't I take it? Really, is the Social Security income guaranteed? Well, it is government backed. And, you know, it's hard. We don't have that with the stock market. And our Social Security is actually inflation adjusted. Every year, late in the fall, we hear about an increase if there's been inflation. So they tack that on. And then as long as you live, it's lifetime income. And guaranteed, they use this word a lot. I don't like that word, because never say never, because Congress actually can legally change this. They actually have the power, and they could reduce or eliminate the benefits at any time. Yes, it's touted as guaranteed by the government by a contractual right, but they have left they've kind of left a little window in case there's some type of, well, I don't want to say crisis, but something where we would need to adjust things from the word guaranteed. Bruce?
Yeah, I just want to, and that's really good start of the conversation, Peg, and very logical. I want to go back just a little bit. It occurs to me that, again, and I'm so frequently guilty of this, that I kind of assume that people listening to me might understand or know some of the things that I know, but maybe they don't. So to try to give clarity to this for people that might not know, your Social Security benefit, you can start to draw on as early as age 62, but you would never wait beyond the age of 70, because the benefit doesn't really appreciate anymore other than maybe a cost of living or an inflation adjustment. So you've basically, you've got an eight-year window from 62 to 70 to determine when are you going to draw benefits. And it might seem obvious if I just stop the description of it at that, and someone could say, wait, I can take it at 62 or I can wait till 70. Why wouldn't I take it right away? Well, the amount of money you get at 62 is going to be considerably less. It's only going to be about, I think, 75% of what you would get at full retirement age. And then it gets even trickier there, because not everybody has the same full retirement age. It depends upon when you were born. But if you were born in 1960 or later, your full retirement age is 67. Full retirement age is when you presumably get what they call full benefits. But even at from 67 to 70, the benefit goes up by about 8% per year. So if you wait 8 years and take it at 70, you're going to get considerably more money than if you take it at 62. But again, the people making this argument are saying, yeah, but if I take it at 62 and I invest it myself, I think I can get a return higher than the appreciation rate that the government gives me. And that appreciation from 62 to full retirement age is about 6% a year. And after that, it's about 8% a year. So, you know, again, like you said, could I invest and make a higher return than that? Yeah. But is there a guarantee that I will? What if the first year I do that, we have a year like 2008 and the stock market's down 50%? So you could take the money early, invest it yourself, and maybe get a better return. But boy, there's something to be said about, and I know we got to be careful with the word guaranteed, but there's something to be said for having, you know, a bird in the hand as opposed to two in the bush. And but that again, that becomes the question. And how confident are you in your ability to invest and get a higher return on investment? But the other thing, Peg, is that I think about people that say they're going to do that. How many of them start taking Social Security and then they end up not actually investing it? They end up spending it or leaving it in a bank account, or they forget to invest it. They maybe start with good intentions, but they don't follow through. So there's a lot of things to consider here.
There is a lot of things with Social Security to consider. And one of them is the break even. You know, if you do take it either 62 or 70 or anywhere in between, if you live to 80, 82, that's kind of the norm, is if you can live beyond that, then maybe it was better to take it at 70 or your full retirement age of 67. You mentioned it, Bruce, there's a lot to it. So we use the word leverage sometimes, which just means, how can you leverage your Social Security? We don't take the suggestion of Social Security lightly at all. There's so many things and so many factors that go into your family unit. It's not like, oh, my neighbor did it, or my brother did it this way, or no, it's a very individualized. And why it's individualized is because it can actually help get more Social Security based on your spouse. So you've got some choices there too of when you take it and who takes it. But so there is a lot of people out there though that take it at full retirement age. It seems to kind of tie in, not perfectly, but with Medicare. Medicare is 65, but full retirement age is coming up to 67 here. So they haven't merged the two. I'm kind of shocked about that they haven't merged, that Medicare would start at 67, but maybe they're working on it. And so delaying those benefits could be an increase. But today what we want to talk about, though, is where I want to get to, is the assumption that the stock market can outperform Social Security. So here's the biggest aha moment that you have to know. I talked about the average of 10% or more. That's an average. In everything we do, Bruce and Susie, is the sequence of returns. What's your risk? And so, yes, we've had lots of years that have been double digits. But Bruce, you already mentioned, we've had a couple that were 20% down in a particular year and not so long ago. So you have to think about timing. You know, timing matters in everything you do. So there's an added risk to taking this idea of, you know, taking my Social Security at 62 and then investing it. Because I can bet, because of our behavior a lot of times derails what our plan was. And let's say you did that, 62, I'm going to invest it in the second year. We have a 25% negative market. It's going to take you a long time to make that up. So that whole plan, you have to be so disciplined to carry it through. Bruce?
Yeah, and again, I think anyone that's listened to our show over the years knows that you and I support investing in stocks at almost every point in your life, even as you reach retirement, as you get older. We still believe in participation in stocks. So some people might be listening and going, boy, Peg and Bruce sound contradictory today because they sound like they like this idea of the guarantees that the Social Security benefit provides rather than investing in stocks. But I don't think we're being contradictory. Again, as you said at the beginning of the show, it's a little bit apples and oranges.
Oh, it absolutely is. And one of the things that we walk through with clients is, you know, once again, it's a family unit, but also, you know, to win at that strategy is you need strong returns early. And that's like anything else. If you can, you know, kind of puff up your beginning of something like that and, you know, keep those returns, that would be great. One of the things that's a little bit scary about these sequence of returns is that I already mentioned the behavior, but when you look at the stock market as a whole, it can be very volatile. And I mentioned that behavioral part of making a decision like that is something where we tend to not keep up with our promise to ourselves that this is what we're going to do for the long term. The last thing I want to say, Bruce, before I hand it over is our buckets. Wealth Enhancement Group talks about these buckets on the money matrix. And we do, you know, how things are taxed. Are they taxable? Are they tax deferred? Are they tax advantaged? and what time frame are you going to hold those, short-term, medium-term, or long-term? Well, I look at Social Security as an anchor of income and being predictable, you know, long-term. And what that does is it gives us the ability to go buy more stock market or for the long term in those buckets, and maybe it's tax advantaged or tax deferred. And so I see this as Social Security being in this kind of premium bucket that's going to kick off this income as part of your entire income planning, Bruce.
Yeah, and to that point, not everybody listening has a traditional defined benefit plan or pension plan. But it's kind of the same thing, right? If somebody has a pension plan, the advice we give them on their investments outside of the pension because of that guaranteed income is going to be very different than if you don't have a pension plan. And this Social Security or this guaranteed income that, that you know you can rely on is going to influence how we recommend that one invest. So again, we still want stock market participation, but there's already leverage in the stock market. We already have other ways that we can invest. Do we really want to take our Social Security money and do that? And I would argue in most cases not. Now listen, sometimes we do recommend that clients do take it early, but it's not based on the idea of investing and get a higher return on investment. It might be that you need it for lifestyle and you don't have other assets. It might be that you have health issues and you think you're going to have a shorter life expectancy. It might be that you don't have any survivor considerations. There's a lot of reasons why we might say, let's take it early. But one of them would not be, let's take it early and invest it with wealth enhancement and we'll get you a higher rate of return. We wouldn't plan that way. I see this, Peg, as a part of comprehensive planning. And from a planning standpoint, to have assured income is very, very powerful. I just don't feel comfortable messing around with that. Now, having said all that, if I have a client that's absolutely adamant, and I've had this happen before, that they say, no, I want to turn it on early. I'm going to invest it. I'll either invest it with you, Bruce, or I'll invest it myself. This is what I want to do. I'm not going to tell someone they can't do it, but if they're asking my opinion whether or not I think they should do it, I'm probably going to say no.
Another way to look at it is if you look at your maximum full benefit and you're at 67 age and you've maxed out, you know, as many credits as you can, that's about $4,000 a month when you turn 67, $4,000 a month. So that's $48,000. If you think about that, you would need $1 million in the bank, basically, to get that 4.8% rate of return, and it has inflation on it if there's any inflation. So that's another reason, though, that we kind of think of that as being the secure part, and let's take some of your other money. Maybe it's your 401k that you rolled over to an IRA, that type of money that you have more control over, versus making this irrevocable decision with this Social Security. You can't go back and say, "Ooh, I was just kidding. Now I don't want to do that. I want to, you know, wait for a higher number." So there's a lot to put it. There's a lot at stake here in making that decision. Hence why we help people, because it is a unique situation. It's not one is all the same. I mentioned that in the beginning of the show. You're all unique in, you know, what you may have as other assets, or, you know, what your health is. I could go on and on about all the things that we take into consideration to give you the advice, Bruce.
Yep. And Susie, I know we've only got a couple minutes left, so I think we can actually finish our discussion. The second half of the show can be all questions from listeners the entire show. But Peg, where we usually look at Social Security on behalf of clients, it's not necessarily should I take it early and invest it. It's should I take it early and use it for lifestyle. And I always tell clients, we can do a Social Security analysis. We can do a crossover calculation. But the decision, and this is what you were just talking about, is not that simple. The decision is more complicated than that in terms of other variables, other priorities, other sources of income. So, again, and I also tell people, this calculation or this advice, it's never going to be an exact science, because we don't know how long you're going to live. So we make assumptions based on what we think are most likely to happen or most logical, And then based on those assumptions, we think we can enhance the chances of you maximizing that benefit. But it's never going to be a sure thing. But again, Peg, last word to you before we take a break. I think we're in agreement that taking it early just to reinvest it is not something that we would generally recommend.
I've never done it for that focus alone. It could be a small component of looking at all avenues, but usually not just a one and done. Hey, yeah, go try that. Hope it all works out, Bruce.
Yeah, and I love that you brought up the fact, because I didn't, that this is an irrevocable decision. So when we make this decision, we want to try to do everything we can to get it right. And again, it's never going to be an exact science, but we can enhance the chances of you getting it right by looking at all the variables, all of your specific circumstances, and then help you make a fully informed decision. But it's always more complicated, Susie, than people think it is. So let's do this. Let's take our break, and the second half of the show can be all listener questions.
All right, very good. If you are listening right now and you are thinking about this as an option and you have some questions for Bruce or Peg, you can call 651-461-9226. Are you thinking about taking Social Security and investing it? If you have a question, you're thinking, well, should I or should I? You just listen. Maybe you still have a question. 651-461-9226. We're back right after this quick break. Welcome back to the second half of Your Money. I'm Susie Jones, along with Bruce Helmer and Peg Webb. Bruce, the co-founder of Wealth Enhancement Group. Peg Webb, Senior Vice President, taking your calls at 651-461-9226. Again, 651-461-9226. Bruce, Peg, do you want to wrap things up and then go to a caller or jump right in? We have Dave calling from Murdoch, Minnesota, which we looked up. It's 2 hours west of the Twin Cities, in case you're wondering.
Peg, anything else you want to hit on before we talk to Dave?
I think we talked to Dave.
All right, Dave, good morning. You're on the air with Bruce and Peg.
Good morning, guys. Appreciate your program. Listen to it every week. And, okay, I have a defined benefits plan. And I was listening to you this morning, and you were saying you would give people with a defined benefits plan a bit of a different, regimen of advice, let's put it that way. I've been retired now for 18 years, and I am 82 years old. And what might you be telling me?
Hey, Dave, thank you for listening. Thank you for the kind words. And I wouldn't have had to look up where Murdoch is. I grew up in Olivia, and I know KMS School District really well. And I know exactly where you're from. I used to play softball against a bunch of guys from your community, Norling softball, if you remember that. But Peg, so Dave has got a traditional defined benefit pension plan, and I mentioned that we might treat his investment advice we give him or somebody with a defined benefit plan, we might treat it, the situation a little bit differently because of that guaranteed income than we would a client that didn't have that kind of guaranteed income. You want to talk a little bit about, you know, what might be different?
Yeah, I believe what you were talking about is when we talked about taking Social Security and it's a guarantee from the government, it's something that you can rely on. And then I actually turned that dollar amount that you get from Social Security into how many dollars would you have to kick off that. In that case, it was a 67-year-old who's going to get $4,000 a month. How do you replace that for $48,000 if you don't take that guarantee from Social Security or you delay it? The same kinds of things are within a defined benefit plan, but most employers don't give you an option of, they give you an option of wanting to take it, but they don't give you an option as a lump sum. You have some decision in timing of taking it, but most people would take it if they were going to leave their company and start their pension. Some pensions give the ability to do a rollover, like take all your cash and take it in your own, you get to invest it on your own. There's fewer and fewer of those these days. There used to be kind of a liability thing with corporations where they say, we don't want these defined benefit plans on our our books. It's like it's 50 years of time or 75 years of time or something. They wanted to give offer of take this cash and you go invest it, employee who's leaving. So those are the kind of the contrasts, Bruce, that I was thinking about when you mentioned that benefit plan in regards to Social Security.
What I was thinking of, it a little bit differently, and I agree with everything you just said, Peg. I was thinking of it, Dave and Peg and Susie and listeners, in terms of, so if Dave or somebody has a pension plan and they have Social Security, and I can look at that, now I'm going to use the word guaranteed, and I can look at that guaranteed income. Now they've got other dollars, other assets, other monies, and we're going to try to decide how to invest that money. And it's going to sound a little bit like I'm arguing with myself, but I can take the position that because you've got all this assurance of income, that gives you the freedom or the flexibility that on this other money, maybe you don't need very, very much, very high return on investment. You can just put it in bank CDs or high yield money market, and you're not, and you don't need stock market exposure because you don't need return on investment because of all this guaranteed income. But on the other hand, I might say because of all this guaranteed income, if you wanted to swing for the fences a little bit and take some additional risk with that money and expose it to the stock market, because if you get it wrong and you and it retracts or in value, it doesn't hurt you anyway because you've got this guaranteed income, you can kind of argue it either way. And it really depends, again, upon the individual goals and objectives, legacy planning, what do you, you know, and I don't want to oversimplify the idea of legacy planning. But Peg, I've had clients, and so have you, that have said legacy planning isn't a priority for me. My kids are doing great. If I spend my last dollar the day I take my last breath, that's fine with me. I've had other clients that leaving a legacy for kids or grandkids or charities or whatever is a very, very high priority. And again, the advice we give on the investment side then is going to be different based on goals and objectives. But I think, Dave, the, what I was thinking, that pension is a wonderful thing to have because it affords you the luxury of way more flexibility on your other investment dollars to either be more aggressive or more conservative, depending upon your goals and objectives and core values and your overall philosophy.
Bruce, Peg, we have another caller. Sandy is calling from Mankato. Go ahead, Sandy. You're on the air with Bruce and Peg.
Oops. Hi, everybody. My question is about drawing at 62. You would have to pay, I'm guessing, you would have to pay taxes on your Social Security. If you invest that and it does very well, you would be paying taxes on that as well. So would it pay to start drawing at 62 or 67?
Hey, Sandy, thank you so much for listening, and thank you. That is such a good question. In fact, Peg and I were kind of talking off air. One of the things we didn't talk about in the first half of the show is the tax ramifications or the tax part of this decision. So you asked the perfect question. You led us right into the one area where we didn't go, and we talked about going. So, Peg, Sandy brings up a great question. The first thing I'd remind people of that might not know is your Social Security benefit itself is taxable. But then what Sandy's saying is, so now I take it and I invest that money, and whatever my return is, that's going to be taxable. So I really, to beat what Social Security would give me, it's not just the gross return on investment, it's the net after tax return on investment. And we have to certainly take that in consideration, Peg.
Yeah, this was on our outline, and we were excited to get to everybody's questions, so I'm glad we did bring this up. Delaying Social Security actually has some great benefits in that, number one, it keeps compounding, but number two is you have lower taxable income in early retirement years. So by not taking it, it doesn't kind of get your other taxes into a different bracket. But it also can create a lot of opportunities, whereas a lot of people defer their 401ks and they've got a big percentage of an IOU to the IRS. Well, this might be a good time to start pulling some of that IRA money out, you know, to get into an after-tax or do Roth conversions where you could get your money, since you've got a lot of tax deferred and you don't have a lot of tax advantage, you could take some of that IRA, do a conversion to a Roth, especially if you're in your early 60s, you've got decades of time. And so that might be a good idea. And then just the overall tax drag that you have as your IRAs just keep compounding and compounding, it gets harder. So we love getting, 60-year-olds and even 50-year-olds to make decisions about taxes, not so much, the rates of return. Bruce?
Yeah, and to Sandy's question and to the point that if you take Social Security early and you invest it, and whatever you invest in, you're probably going to have taxes on those gains on that investment. There are things you can do to delay or avoid the taxes. You can do municipal bonds, but then your return on investment is going to be a lot lower. Or you can do things like annuities that are tax deferred, where you delay the tax. But the tax ramifications are a huge part of that decision-making process. And again, Peg, to me, it's another reason why very rarely would I recommend that you take it early just for the idea of reinvesting it yourself. There, again, taking it early might make sense, but not probably for that specific reason. There's probably other reasons that we would take under consideration if we were going to have somebody take it that early. Peg?
Yeah, and we didn't get to the when claiming early might make sense. You have a shortened life expectancy. Let's say you're single, you've got something, your health isn't that good, that might be one. If you don't have a spouse or a survivor to consider at all, that may be another reason that you just say, you know what, I'm going to take this early. Maybe you need that money. We didn't even talk about this. Maybe you need that money just for your monthly break even. So there's lots of decisions, and I think I mentioned this so many times, but there's lots of decisions in that everybody is different. The family unit is different, and we take that all into consideration because you have to make a better probability of success decision when you walk through all these things before just saying, oh, my neighbor, my sister, somebody did it this way, I'm going to follow them. Get some, solid advice just on you.
Peg, the other thing that I just thought of and probably should have mentioned earlier, but it just hit me. So I've been doing this for over 40 years. I've been a financial advisor over 40 years, and I've been sitting here thinking, if I can remember a situation where I ever had a client retire and spend less the first year or two after they retire than they did their last years of work. And maybe there is one, and we're talking hundreds now, hundreds and hundreds of clients. So maybe I'm forgetting somebody, but I honestly can't think of a situation where that happened. The vast majority of people will spend more money the first 5 years, 4, 5, 6 years after they retire than the last few years while they were working. And to some, that might seem surprising. It's like, well, wait a minute. Don't a lot of my costs go away when I retire? I'm not contributing to a company retirement plan anymore. I don't have costs associated with going to work, whether it's fuel costs getting there, whether it's a wardrobe or eating lunches out. I have a lot of costs that go away. Aren't I going to spend less at retirement? But then think about the other side of it. Bucket list, although I don't like that term, people know what I'm talking about when I say it. I like live it list. But you have things that you want to do to enhance your life. It might be travel. It might be volunteering. It might be something spiritual. It might be a lot of different things. But most of these things take money. And so most of my clients will want to, for lack of a better word, front load their retirement income. So when we do this Social Security analysis to try to determine what is the most efficient way to take it and get the most benefit over your statistical life, over your lifetime, I've had people, Peg, where I've demonstrated, look, if you wait and you live to your statistical life expectancy, you're going to get more net benefit by waiting. But they've said, I'm going to take it anyway because I want way more income in my 60s than I will in my 80s or even my 70s. So So again, that's what earlier we talked about, all the different variables to take into consideration, but that's a big one. Almost everybody I can ever think of will spend more the first few years after they retire. So they might want Social Security and take income from their investments and front load that income. And then after they've checked everything off their bucket list, or maybe their health starts to deteriorate a little bit, they don't have the same energy, they slow down, then they spend less for a lot of years. But those first few years, Peg, I'm going to steal your line. I think you talk about the go-go, the slow-go, and the no-go years.
Yes, I do. Susie?
Yeah, 651-461-9226. Let us see. This texter just texted us this question. I took my Social Security at 62 as my husband was sick and didn't take his and did pass at 68 years old and 11 months. I will switch to his when I reach 67. I believe that is when I can max it out. How often does that happen when you have sort of a couple that has a situation where they each have to do it at a different time? Is that normal, Peg, Bruce?
Yeah, so Susie, you bring up a really, really good point. So again, our conversation so far today has been really focusing on Social Security as though it's one person. But the reality is the vast majority of the time with married couples, there's two people that might have a Social Security benefit. And sometimes they're the same age or close to the same age, but sometimes there's a big variance in their age. And sometimes there's a big discrepancy between the amount of benefit. Maybe one person was the primary wage earner and another part of the married couple or the partnership didn't work as much or didn't make as much money and their benefit's a lot smaller. So these are all things that come into play when we do this analysis, Peg.
Yeah, so there's an analysis that we do, and what happens is, so if you're at full retirement age at 67, I keep talking about 67 so I don't have to talk about 66 and 10 months or something like that, but 67 is the age, and you mentioned it, where then you percent of the of your spouse. And so if that's actually when you switch, but you have to see with all the inflation that Social Security has and what that number is, make sure that you talk to your financial advisor or the Social Security Administration to get a good handle on what dollar amount and what would that change when you turn 67. Bruce?
Hey, I'm just going to add clarity because, again, I can imagine people out there wondering what the heck we're talking about. So for Social Security full retirement age, and that's important to know that, and I'm going to give everyone another reason why that matters here in a second. But if you were born in 1954 or earlier, your full retirement age was 66. If you were born in 1960 or later, your full retirement age is 67. But if you were born in between, as I was born in 1959, so my full retirement age is 66 years and 10 months. So if you're born in 1955, it's 66 years and 2 months. So for every year between 54 and 60, every year that you were born, you add 2 months to the full retirement age. And that's why it can be a lot of different things for a lot of different people. And we've been talking as though everybody listening was born in 1960 or later and full retirement age is 67. But a lot of you listening, obviously, that's not true with you and it's not true with me. But the other thing I wanted to mention, Peg, another reason why knowing this full retirement age is so important, we have a lot of clients that want to continue to work after, you know, they hit their 60s or after they consider starting to take their Social Security benefit. But if you start to take your benefit, and again, remember what our theme was for the question today, should I take it at 62 and then reinvest it myself? Well, if you're still working at age 62, you're going to have a negative consequence to your benefit by taking it early. So if you reach full retirement age, then you can continue to work. And no matter how much money you make, it's not going to have a negative impact on your Social Security benefit. But if you start taking it early before full retirement age and you're still working, that's going to definitely be detrimental to the amount of benefit that you get. So that's something else that people need to consider in this do I take it early or not decision. Am I still working and I haven't reached full retirement age yet? Peg?
Bruce, you're just really letting all the listeners know that this is complex. I mean, it is a lot to take into consideration, and I'm kind of surprised at how many people just say, "Oh, I would love to get this money monthly," and you know, and not take all this into consideration. But today's a good wake up call. I think that you know, you either get some help or go to your financial advisor, because there's so many different ways that you can take it that's tailored to you.
Right.
Susie?
Yeah, 651-461-9226. The questions continue to come in here. I'm divorced, age 68, still working. I know I can claim my ex-husband's Social Security. How do I find out how much his would be for me?
Oh, that's a really good question. So, Peg, just to get to add some context, I know the key here to be able to draw on an ex-spouse's benefit. You have to have been married 10 years or longer, and you can't have remarried. So you still need to be single. But then in terms of, boy, the logistics of how do you know when and how much you can draw, I'm not sure, Peg.
Well, I would actually call the Social Security Administration. They actually should be able to give you that. Now, they're going to probably want, you know, some verification of who you are and that kind of thing, because you can't just say, hey, you know, this was my husband and, you know, get that information. So, but I would absolutely contact the Social Security Administration. They would have all those records.
All right.
You know, and I'm sorry, Susie, and the other thing I thought of, and I know this is not the case in all situations, I would like to think or hope that even though you're divorced, you have a good enough relationship where you're honest enough or ethical enough that you say to your ex-spouse, look, I'm drawing my benefit now. You're eligible to draw also. And there's some form of communication where you tell them, hey, you can start drawing. But I realize that's probably not true 100% of the time.
All right, 651-461-9226. I'm married with two adult daughters that we trust completely. I'm updating my power of attorney. I thought I would add my wife and two daughters as agents and vice versa for my wife. Any thoughts on that?
Okay, we're almost out of time. You want to take it?
Well, I actually like what you all said was if you trust them, and it sounds like you do, then having them on as agents and having your spouse as a secondary person or the person who's going to take care of everything at the end, that's the best situation if you can keep it in the family. Bruce?
Yep, I agree.
Susie?
Yeah, you guys, that was a great show. We didn't get to everybody, so if you're listening right now, you can call 1-888-6-ADVICE or also email questions to yourmoney@wealthenhancement.com. That is yourmoney@wealthenhancement.com if you want to follow up and email them. Also, you can call and get a free consultation at 1-888-6-ADVICE.